7 o'clock, and bring cash.
And remember, you're making pledges to WBAI to support listener-supported radio. We've got troops over in Somalia trying to feed the starving kids. Right downstairs from where you live, there are people starving. Why don't you help them tonight? Thank you for listening. This is Joe King. I'll see you next week.
Coming this Saturday at 9 p.m., The Secret Museum of the Air. Dateline 100 years ago. Daring explorers risk their lives to capture the hidden sounds of humanity with a newly discovered invention, the gramophone. Join Citizen Kafka and curator Pat Conti as they slowly peel back the layers of time to enter the shrouded mists of the golden age of the gramophone. Each week, the lost sounds of historic recordings from the far corners of the earth on the Secret Museum of the Air. Visiting hours every Saturday from 9 to 10 p.m. Remember, knowledge is power, thoughts have wings, and the Secret Museum is open this Saturday at 9 p.m. That's Saturday, 9 p.m., the Secret Museum of the Air. 9 p.m. Saturday. 9 p.m. Saturday.
And it's 10:19 p.m. This is a special day. Things are going a little bit crazy, both here at WBAI and throughout the world. So normally, Off the Hook comes to you at 10 o'clock, but because it's such a crazy day, Off the Hook is coming to you at 10:19. Off the Hook is here. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Interesting. I don't know what it is, but the phones are lighting up. We haven't even asked for a penny yet, but maybe it's the song. The song Don Quixote by Magazine 60. All kinds of telephone-related madness and computer-related madness and technological absurdities and things like that. Sometimes it's inspirational. It causes some of us to wake up, see things around us, see the bigger picture around us. And you know, a day like today, when there's so much going on in the world, and boy, was there a lot going on. I mean, enough to suit everybody. Local, national, international, interstellar, all kinds of things happening. It's nice to be able to relate the small things to the big things. And to a lot of people, how our telephones work and how we shape the cyberspace around us. It's kind of a personal thing, and hence kind of a trivial thing. It doesn't really affect all that many people, but my friends, that is such a deceiving way of looking at it, you know? Because how we think of the things that affect our personal lives translates to how we treat other people out there, what we expect of them, how we view the world. And so, if you look at technology in a particular way, odds are you're going to look at certain events in the world in a certain way, too. In other words, if you're a skeptic in one particular field, you'll be a skeptic in most things. Very few people are gullible in one subject and completely knowledgeable in another. It's not to say that possible to know everything there is to know about everything. It's not. But as long as you know that there's always room for error, always the possibility that you're not being told the truth, always the possibility that somebody's trying to put one over on you. You know, there's no better place to learn that than with your telephone. Because your telephone is run by a monopoly. And despite all this talk about the phone company splitting up and offering choice, well, that may be true, but that's only on a long-distance level. Locally, you only get one dial tone from one company, whether it's New Jersey Bell, New York Telephone, Southern New England Telephone, what have you. The fact is, they're really the only game in town until something else comes along, and you have to play by their rules. There aren't many alternatives. Oh, there are alternatives, like writing letters, using radio communication, face-to-face meetings. But if you want the convenience of a telephone, you pretty much have to accept the universe as the phone company believes it is. And many times that doesn't really jive with reality. Now, fortunately, we have a bit more choice when it comes to looking at the world view. There are different interpretations, there's different sources of information, and for the most part, we can search them out, we can find interesting magazines, alternative radio stations. We can usually find the other side, or sides. But the vast majority of Americans treat the worldview as if it were the only game in town. They accept, without any kind of question, what they're told by their leaders, by their networks, by those with commanding voices. Now, obviously, there's a danger in that. Of course, if you go out to buy a car and somebody tells you various things about this car that you're interested in buying and you believe every word of it, you're going to get ripped off. If you believe everything the phone company says, you'll get ripped off as well. If you believe everything that you hear on the radio, on TV, and in various speeches and other calls to arms and things like that, you'll get ripped off in another sense. And we're here at WBAI to show you that there are other points of light. There are other sources of light. And they're almost infinite, I'd say. Where is this all leading? Well, obviously we have a fundraiser today. We need to raise quite a bit of cash, or charge, or checks, or what have you. Interesting how they all begin with C. Wonder why that is. But the reason we need to do this is so that we can continue to bring you alternative views. Now, you've been listening to this radio station throughout the course of the day, if you have, that is. You will have heard things that you wouldn't hear on any other radio station. And I know some people out there, and some of these people are my friends. They really are. People that think the opinions expressed here on WBAI are nuts, crazy. People must be out of their minds to say these kind of things. What, question the government? Question bombing a madman and sending troops in and ignoring concentration camps and various other U.S. policies? Well, you know, whether you agree or not, you have to recognize the fact that these opinions need to be there. Once you take away alternative opinions, you're left with a very scary animal. You're left with a single-mindedness, which can be used for all kinds of nefarious schemes. So I think it's in everybody's interest to keep that from happening, to keep alternative voices coming, because we're always going to hear something we disagree with, and we're always going to hear something we agree with at some point. As long as we keep our ears open, what is guaranteed is that we will learn something. Now, to get to technological alternative opinions, hasn't been a good week for me. Lost a very, very dear friend this week. Someone I had been accustomed to all of my life. Someone I had grown up with. My friend, the Touchtone, left me this week. No, I shouldn't say that, actually. My friend, the Touchtone, was taken from me. What am I talking about, you're probably wondering. Well, I woke up Monday morning and found that the phone company had turned off all of my Touchtones. Actually, that's not true. What I say is not true, because my Touchtones were still there. They had simply programmed their computers to ignore my Touchtones. I would hit a tone, and the dial tone would still hum merrily on, as if to say, what's that supposed to mean? So now I have to rotary pulse all of my phone calls, just like everybody had to back in the 50s and 60s. And the reason for this is because I never paid their particular fee that they say is required for Touchtone service. Never mind that it took all of this time for them to develop a computer program that could selectively control who had Touchtone service and who did not, before everybody had access to it. And now only the people that have fees, the only people that pay fees, have access to it. It's control of technology, and in a way it's theft of service, because most people pay for this particular service thinking they're paying for a service. That's generally what you do when you pay for a service. But in this particular case, you're paying not to have another service turned on. And that service that gets turned on is the Touchtone Snatcher service, which basically operates by the telephone company computer ignoring your touchtones. After all, remember, the tones don't belong to the phone company. They belong to you. You make them. They come from your phone. It's like the phone company putting a surcharge on high-pitched voices, saying it's a high-pitched voice service or something like that. It's like the phone company saying, well, certain numbers are more valuable than other numbers. For instance, 9 is more valuable than 1, so we'll have to charge you more if you use the 9 key. And we won't charge you as much to use the 1. What you have to understand here is that the phone company will never, never lose an opportunity to charge you for something if they can get away with it. And this is exactly what we've been covering here over the past few months. Deception. People being gullible and believing what they're told and not questioning. Now, of course, with the phone company, as I said, it's a monopoly, so you don't really have all that much of a choice. You have to accept it. But forums like this and letters to editors, public service commission hearings, and things like that allow us to at least get the topics out. And that's what we're doing here with this particular topic. We're getting it out. We're letting people know that it's maybe not a crime against humanity, but it is deception. It is a ripoff. It is victimizing people in a small way. Now, by charging people $16 to install something that doesn't really exist, by charging people a monthly fee for a service that really isn't there, and then multiplying that by all the businesses and people in New York City and the surrounding areas, then you'll see that this little tiny thing really is something rather big. Something we should be concerned with, something we should do something about. Now, last week we demonstrated how technology can move backwards. We made a local phone call and found that it took nearly 5 times as long to connect as a call to Sweden from the same area. An example of technology moving backwards. Well, here again, we see a potentially good thing. We see technology coming forth with some advances, but then because of bureaucracy, because of short-sightedness, because of deception, we're forced to move backwards. And whether it's something major, like being forced backwards into military aggression, where technology for peaceful purposes suffers, or whether it's something minor, like having to use rotary pulse and take longer to make your phone calls. It's the general thought that's still the same. Selfishness, deception, and a lack of caring for the greater good. Now, with regards to this particular situation, just a little tip, because we provide these tips for people who might be in a similar situation. You don't have to pay that fee. Just remember that. The vast majority of touch-tone phones will work on either pulse or tone, and if the phone company doesn't want you to use touch-tones on their network, you don't have to. Simply dial the number in pulse And if you need to use tones after you're connected, you still can. Of course, they'll make it seem as if you can't. But if you want to call a voicemail system, a bank-by-phone system, an alternative long-distance company, it's only the initial call that you have to use Pulse with. You switch over to tone, and you're treated as an equal with everybody else. Of course, this hurts the phone company, you know, because more people are using Pulse, takes longer to make the phone calls, but that's what they want. Let's give it to them. Enough said about that. We have a special guest who will be joining us in just a little while. Another freedom fighter in the electronic world. But before we do that, before we go into some of the happenings of this week, it's important that we get people to call in and show some support for alternative views, whether it be technological alternative views or global alternative views. WBAI exists for just that kind of thing. For instance, what I just told you about the phone company, do you think that would be allowed on, say, a talk radio station? I won't mention any names, but any talk radio station in the city. Well, if that talk radio station in the city didn't care that New York Telephone would not advertise with them anymore because they were mortally offended. We just mortally offended New York Telephone. And I'll tell you, we mortally offend more companies on this particular program than I think any other program around. Because we have alternative views, and very often alternative views are exactly what they don't want you to hear, because they're used to having only their version. Question the phone company? That's dangerous. Next thing you know, they'll be overthrowing the government. So if you get something out of these alternative views, whether it's learning how to use your phone more efficiently, learning how to protect your privacy, or any of the other thousands of things you'll hear on this radio station, please give us a call now, 212-279-3400. We have a special deal tonight. And this is a special deal, just for off-the-hook listeners. For a pledge of $70, we're offering not only a subscription to 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, which has just put out a new issue, but a 2600 t-shirt. An official 2600 t-shirt. No imitations. White lettering on black. And you'll stand out like nobody's business. But you have to call 212-279-3400. Not so much for the material possessions. We're donating this because we believe in WBAI as well. Everybody who's here tonight is donating something, whether it be time, money, material possessions. Please call because WBAI means something to you. Because without this radio station, you'd be forced to listen to the garbage, whether it's the same incessant beat, the same singers that sound like hinges on doors, the same repetitious talk, and the same news headlines read from the same news wire on every single station in the city. We don't do that. We give you alternatives, and sometimes it might get you angry. Sometimes it might get lots of people angry. But we're here to present alternative views. And if you have something to say, you're 100 times likelier to say it on WBAI than any other place. Other places really don't want to hear from you. Well, they want you to buy the products that get advertised, but just stay out of their way, please. Not so here. We want to hear from our listeners. And we want to hear from you now, please. 212-279-3400. We have three calls on the line. Let's give the folks in Tally a run for their money. Let's make it 7. All right, there's 1. There's 2. Another 2. And we'll have it. 212-279-3400. Remember that deal. For a $70 pledge, a full year of 2600 Magazine, the Hacker Quarterly, kind of the printed version of what this radio show is, where virtually without fail, 4 times a year, 48 pages of material that gets passed around at emergency corporate board meetings. Things they don't want you to know about, whether it be radio frequencies, phone company secrets, computer backdoors, privacy invasions. You know, lots of people think that computer hackers are notorious privacy snatchers. And you get that impression by watching mainstream media. And because mainstream media always needs a villain, they latch on to computer hackers. An easy villain, and rather hard for computer hackers to stand up and defend themselves. Most of them are fairly young people, after all, not really versed in the skills of defending themselves against the media and against corporate executives and people like that. But in actuality, computer hackers are probably more responsible for protecting privacy than any other group of people, whether it be organized or disorganized, because whether by intention or not, they raise awareness. They show you how wide open the doors really are. Doors that the people who own them don't want you to even know about. Do you think credit reporting agencies want you to know how easy it is to look up your credit rating and look up other people's credit ratings? Yeah, you'll hear about hackers doing it. But what the stories won't say is that anybody can do it, and anybody does do it. All the time. Here's a story along those lines, having to do with looking up information. And this is the kind of thing that happens almost on a weekly basis. This comes from the Boulder Daily Camera of January 8, 1993. A private investigator and two police employees have been indicted by a Denver grand jury for improperly obtaining the criminal histories of 8,559 individuals. The private eye paid $3 to $5 per search and as much as $1,300 per week. Apparently he kept really good records. The scheme unraveled when a co-worker of the police employee who was doing the snooping became angry that her colleague was spending so much time looking up names that she was falling behind in her regular work. So after seeing a criminal history format on her screen that she was not supposed to be using, the co-worker turned her in. A computer log revealed that on the day she was caught, she had run checks on 95 people. It turns out that a transaction recording system allowed investigators to reconstruct all 8,559 criminal history searches. But you have to wonder, you know, with such a fantastic system of logging all of that, they couldn't find the fact that all these people were being investigated. After all, it's because somebody turned in a co-worker that this was ever discovered. So, that kind of thing is happening all the time. And if you just look at the symptoms of a problem and blame the symptom for the problem itself, you'll never solve the problem. How many times do we have to learn this lesson? Out of money. And in fact, when I mention that to people and they say, so, that communist radio station you work for, how much money do you think you're going to pull in? And you say $350,000. They say, wow, you guys are raking in the money. But think of it in this way. $350,000, we have three pledge drives a year. Let's say we bring in about that much for each pledge drive. That's $1 million a year. I don't know about you, but you can't really run a radio station in the middle of New York City on $1 million a year. I don't think any other radio station in this city is able to survive on a budget anywhere close to that. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason why we're able to survive so long on so little money. It's because we don't really pay anybody here. We don't pay people to be on-air personalities or studio engineers or any of the other hundreds of tasks that people do. We all do it because we want to, because we recognize the need for alternatives. So come join us. Recognize that need. 212-279-3400. Take advantage of the special offer for a $70 pledge. $70, you'll get a 2600 t-shirt filled with all kinds of hacker articles and clippings in a most artistic way, and a full year of 2600 magazine delivered wherever you want us to deliver it. Not only that, but you'll get the WBAI folio, which is really the only way to know what's on when. And that's something that's true of people here at the radio station as well. It's the only way to know what's happening, is to look at the folio. 212-279-3400. We have open lines. All right, let's take a look at what's going on in the rest of the computer world. All kinds of fascinating developments and foul-ups and blunders and things like that. You know, the passing leap year caught several New Zealand bank customers short. This was a couple of Thursdays ago, when the bank's money machines refused to process their transactions. The managing director said that a faulty date-checking routine had corrupted the magnetic strip on the customer's money machine cards. Yeah, the fault had to do with the fact that 1992 was a leap year, and that Thursday was the 366th and last day of the year. Now, the money machines were programmed to acknowledge the extra day, but instead of the year 1992 being encoded, the figure 02 was used. Now, the problem became apparent about 10 a.m. on Thursday and covered a period from midnight to noon that day, when it was finally fixed. Only those customers who made two separate transactions during the period were initially affected. The first transaction went through, but that problem occurred when their cards were inserted a second time. According to the spokesman, all customers who used their cards during the 12 hours, possibly about 10,000, are now carrying corrupted cards. Okay. And we have this. News reports indicated that the Ross Perot campaign is being investigated by the FBI, Secret Service, and Federal Trade Commission for allegedly using stolen computer codes to obtain credit reports on some campaign workers. Investigators refused to discuss the case, but former Perot campaign employees Equifax, the credit reporting company, and Oryx Consumer Leasing of Secaucus, New Jersey, admitted having spoken to investigators. Equifax said at least 17 credit files of former Perot campaign workers may have been accessed illegally. Some Equifax reports were obtained using the security code of Oryx, which claims to never have requested the credit reports on Perot volunteers. Officials at Oryx and Equifax have said they believe Oryx's security codes were stolen. And more reassuring computer news. The B-767 aircraft suffers repeated failures of the computer that controls the individual passenger lights and sound. Ever have problems with those kind of things on an airplane? Well, now you know. It's a computer. Unlike earlier aircraft, all the switches on the armrests, including the individual light switches, sound channel and volume, and attendant call button, are controlled by a computer. On a recent flight, according to this contributor in the Risks Digest, from Milan to Washington, the computer wedged shortly into the flight. Although one attendant figured that the situation would have to wait until the plane landed, another managed to reset the computer. According to the attendants, these computer problems happen all the time. May not be a life-threatening situation this time, but it's something to be concerned with when computers fail on airplanes. And we have another scam here. Value Rent-A-Car rigged its computer system to set up a scam overcharging customers who return their cars with less than a full tank, according to a federal indictment. The indictment returned on Friday says Stephen Cohen, one of three former owners charged, fixed Value's computer system in 1988 to add 5 gallons to the fuel tank capacity of every vehicle in Value's fleet. This allowed the company to overcharge customers who turned in the car with less than a full tank. Federal prosecutor Lothar Genge, well, I'd be afraid to have him after me, Lothar Genge said that through 1991, about 47,000 customers were slapped with a phony charge, which ranged from a couple of dollars to $10 or $15. Mitsubishi Motor Sales bought the company in 1990 and is looking for ways to pay back the overcharges. Isn't that nice? And what else do we have? Nintendo. The government is probing claims of health hazards to children playing computer games like Nintendo. The informal inquiry follows reports that two boys in Cardiff had been struck down with epileptic fits. That's Nintendo, yes. And according to a troubleshooting talk show in Denver, a caller called in to complain that his license had been revoked and he had to leave his car since he couldn't drive. Apparently, he had renewed his driver's license recently, which is required every 3 years in Colorado. At that time, a database check was made of the other 49 states. There was a match based on birth date and name. The other person with the same name and birth date had a suspended Pennsylvania driver's license based on a drunk driving conviction. You know, it seems every week we read a story like this. Well, based on that match, his license was summarily revoked. Notice was mailed to him to that effect. He, by the way, never received that notice, he says. The license showed revoked at a routine traffic stop sometime later. It's not clear how automatic the revocation process is. In any case, no hearing is offered before the revocation. The driver was especially upset because he had had a Colorado driver's license for 25 years. He had never been to Pennsylvania, and he didn't drink. Now, the burden is apparently upon him to prove the Colorado Department of Motor Vehicles that they had the wrong man. At present, he is still fighting the organization trying to get his license reinstated. Time after time, we hear these stories about computers that decide things for us, and we must pay the consequences. And finally, we have a story here. Because of a computer problem, thousands of college students have been sent notices ordering them to begin repaying loans that aren't due. It's according to a loan processing company in St. Paul, Minnesota. Shirley Chase, an attorney for EduServe Technologies, formerly known as Hemart Corporation, said problems with a new computer system caused a backlog in processing student requests to defer payments. She said the company hopes to clear up the backlog by the end of February. More than 10,000 deferment forms are backlogged, she said. Because of the backlog, some students who are entitled to postpone their loan payments have gotten notices urging them to pay, and some have been contacted by a collection agency. Chase said EduServe has bent over backward to make sure no adverse credit reports are filed with credit bureaus because of the delay. EduServe processes loans issued by banks and other lenders. Unbelievable. Well, how much are we going to take? How much will we allow ourselves to be controlled, manipulated, like the very data itself? Well, if you keep your eyes open, if you ask a lot of questions, you might get some people angry, but you will get answers, you will get education. All right, we're at just about the halfway mark for the program and about the halfway mark for our goal. We need to hear from more people at 212-279-3400. If you support the kinds of things we bring you on the airways here at WBAI, then give us a call and show that support. 212-279-3400. We're going to be back in a couple of minutes with a special guest and with other information. Again, let me point out that anybody calling in pledging $70 will get an entire year of 2600 Magazine plus an official, non-imitation 2600 t-shirt that hackers all over the world wear. Now, the cause for all kinds of talk. You'll be pointed out. You'll stand out like a sore thumb if that's the kind of thing you want. Otherwise, you can wear a shirt over it. All right, we'll be back in just a moment with a special guest. Again, that phone number, very important phone number, 212-279-3400. Thank you.
I'm everybody says that she's the brains behind it all.
She's 68, but she says she's 54.
That's a fairly little-known selection by the group The Specials, doing the Dylan masterpiece Maggie's Farm here on WBAI New York, where the news will not be on tonight, even though this is an incredible news day, but we have a special marathon edition of Off the Hook. We'll be going until midnight, and of course, if anything does happen relating to world events, we'll certainly break in to bring those to you, as we always do. We're here because we need to raise money so that we can keep going. We have quite a phenomenal goal that we have to meet for this entire marathon, but our goal here tonight is not all that unreachable, and it'll become all the less so if we get a flurry of calls now. 212-279-3400. We've got Jim Thomas, who is the editor of Computer Underground Digest, on the line with us. We'll be joining him in just a moment to talk about all kinds of other issues involving the world of computers, the Internet, First Amendment, and the future, and all that kind of thing. There aren't really very many places you can hear information like that, and without BAI, there wouldn't be any. And if you did hear about these things, it would be so seldom, so little, and none of us would benefit from it. So your support, although it may seem like it's not all that much, if you pledge $25, pledge $50, you might think that's nothing. It's something. It all adds up. We're well over $20,000 for the day, I believe. I think that's a figure I saw before. And every pledge adds up. So if we get all those lines lit, 212-279-3400, that'll be about $1,000 coming in just like that. Think about it. You can start it. You can start this whole motion. 279-3400, area code 212. Take advantage of the special deal we're offering tonight, where you'll get a subscription to the Hacker Magazine 2600 and a 2600 t-shirt, plus the WBAI folio for a pledge of $70. But we do accept pledges of any amount. And we also take Visa and MasterCard, and we've got one phone call on the line. If we can get that up to, say, three phone calls. I don't think that'll be too much to ask. I mean, this is the city of New York, right? New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut and Long Island. Surely within all that area, there's two other people that can call in and help us make that goal. Take advantage of the special offer. You know, it's not entirely painful. In fact, it's not painful at all, because I've been through this myself. I've supported this radio station. I've supported other radio stations on occasion, too. And it never has hurt me yet. You know, it feels like you're doing something, and that, you know, it's better than voting. It really is, because it's more selective. You're picking something out, and you're saying, yes, I'm going to support this. I'm going to make this stronger. It's an investment in our future. We don't have any commercials in this radio station, and we never will. We can't. It's against everything we stand for. But we need something to replace those commercials. We need sponsors of a different kind, and our listeners are the best sponsors we can possibly have. 212-279-3400. We can continue to keep freedom of speech alive on the FM airwaves in New York City, but it's going to take some help. You know, we've gone this far. We've made it from the 1960s to now. Everybody told us, we're fools. We can't do this. You can't run a huge radio station in the middle of the FM dial, 50,000 watts, in the most expensive city in the planet. Well, we did it. And the only reason we did it was because our listeners were there for us. And if you're hearing my voice, you're a listener. That's right, you're a listener. And you can become part of this. You already are a part of this by listening. Now, make it a two-way street. Show your support, make us stronger, and we'll show our appreciation by continuing to bring you these alternative views, continuing to bring you news that you would not hear anyplace else, and in a more materialistic sense, sending you some kind of neat things. T-shirts, magazines, program schedules, that kind of thing. But most of all, you'll be helping out this radio station, you'll be making us stronger. Ordinarily, we have the rebroadcast of the evening news here, and because things went haywire today, we're running a little bit late, and this is a special edition as well of this program, so the news isn't on tonight, but 24 hours a day, this station is bringing you alternatives of some kind, whether it be news, music, interviews, public affairs shows, arts shows, an incredible diversity. We need your support, and we need it now. I know a lot of people like to wait, you know, they like to postpone things. But, you know, when you postpone things, lots of times you don't get it done ever. It's true, you know. So, do you see a telephone within sight? If you do, then there's really nothing stopping you. Give us a call, 212-279-3400. Your choice. You can bill it to Visa or MasterCard, or you can have us send you a little reminder and support us in that particular way. Again, a pledge of $70 will get you a 2600 t-shirt and a subscription to the magazine for a full year. But we have other things too, and we have a room filled with volunteers. And right now we have 5 open lines, which means there's 5 volunteers who feel awfully left out. Let's make their night worthwhile. They came in here, they volunteered their time, and they're sitting by a phone. Each one has their own special phone. 212-279-3400. You'll make a lot of people happy. All right. Let's go to Jim Thomas, who is out in Chicago, is it?
Yeah, I'm out in DeKalb. How you doing?
How you doing? You're the editor of Poet
Radio. Kind of cool. I was just listening to that whole rap there, and maybe just to do a quick diversion, make a pitch. What do you get for that $70?
For $70, we're giving away the 2600 T-shirt and a full-year subscription.
Wow, so basically for that $70, you get basically $70 worth of merchandise almost.
Well, it's not quite $70, but, you know, it's not... that number is never supposed to really really match. It's a donation, you know. But we're trying to give back as much as possible.
Fantastic black with nice great silver on the front and back, and the headlines to steel. $70 a total steel.
Yeah.
And $2,600 worth it.
So you're the
279-3400.
You know, one thing we're gonna spend money on is this phone system, because we can't talk two ways at once for some reason. But let me just say, you're the co-editor of Computer Underground Digest.
Yeah, CU Digest, CUD.
Now, when did that get started?
It started about 1990. We came out of the Nydorf and Len Rose problems.
Uh-huh.
A couple of guys were busted on two related but separate charges, and Len was, I believe, in January of 1990. And actually, Greg went down about the same time, but he came up for trial in June of 90. One was an alleged hacker case, and the other was an alleged theft of copyright proprietary information case. And we started because Pat Townsend, who was putting out a newsletter, electronic newsletter called Telecom Digest, couldn't handle the overflow. So we volunteered to pick up just some of the Len Rose and Craig-related material, and just kept going. You know, we thought it was going to be for a couple of weeks. And next thing we knew, it's 1993, and we're talking to you.
This is kind of like a Nightline story. You know, they start as a result of one crisis, and just keeps going forever.
Yeah, very similar. And Problem is that the Nightline crisis kind of ended, and as you made very clear in your pitch for the money, that these kinds of crises, the need to keep information free and to push for support just never ends.
I should point out that we have three calls on the line, which is it's good to see, but there's seven lines altogether. And I'd like to see, it'd be really nice, make me feel good. I'm on my way to Texas tomorrow to cover the Steve Jackson trial. It'd be nice if when I'm on that plane, because I hate planes, if I could just think back at WBAI and say, hey, I got a bingo. I got all those lines lit. And you can help. There's we only need four people out there to join hands, or you don't even have to join hands. Just dial or push your buttons or whatever. 212-279-3400. Pledge what you can afford. Show your support for WBAI, and you'll help us out. You'll make people here happy. You'll make future listeners happy, because they don't know. They don't know what WBAI is yet. They haven't yet heard it. But new people tune in every day. You know, they hear us for the first time, and they wonder how a station like this can possibly survive. And it's simply by people like you out there showing your support and calling up. 212-279-3400. Please don't delay that call. Now, Jim, with Computer Underground Digest, it's distributed primarily over the Internet, correct?
Yeah, it's exclusively over Internet. If anybody wants, we can send out hard copies, or we can put the stuff on disk and send it to them. We hate to do it because we're non-profit, and unlike radio, that we can do it at a lower overhead. But the discs and the time still come out of our pockets. We do kind of hate to do it. I hope you don't mind. I just try to make a connection to what you're all doing there. What we're doing doesn't cost a lot of money. What you're doing does cost a lot of money. And as one who's been involved in public radio, the whole notion of struggle being as long as history can't be overstated. It costs a few bucks to keep you guys going. So I'm just making a pitch that people ought to call that number and plug in, because information, like you say, is crucial, free information, keeping the public informed, and without things like WBAI and their counterparts throughout the country, we'd be screwed.
That's true.
Listener-supported means just that. And like Johnny Mitchell says, we don't know what we got till it's gone. So.
Yeah, and if BAI were gone, there'd certainly be a gap in the radio world here in New York. There aren't stations like this in most parts of the country, and that's why you got to hold on to what you got while you have it.
Well, it's part of the whole notion of the computer revolution and what CUD tries to do. I know what you try to do with 2600 and what others are also involved in is keeping the information flowing. And there's a lot of obstacles to it, primarily the vested interests, whether they be the corporate capitalist type or just simply the hangers-on, the wannabes who make their bucks as lackeys and sycophants. And one thing that CUD tries to do is not just simply get the information, but raise some of the issues. And again, a bit like 2600, challenge and tweak when we can.
Uh-huh. Now, when you first got started with this, obviously you had no idea it was going to last this long. Now, after three or so years of publishing CUD or CUD, are you left with a more, I guess, cynical look at the way things work, the way people are put on trial for various offenses, or do you think there's
no,
hope?
No, I'm out of the 60s, and well, there's two of us. Gordon Meyer is the co-editor, and he's a good, strong Clinton Democrat, and I'm a little more to the left than that, and we tend to balance each other out. So no, I'm not cynical or jaundiced in that sense, at least anymore. So. The one thing we've seen in the what we call the cyberspace law, cyberspace control, is simply, well, a couple of things going on. First of all, you have your economic interests, but more than that, I think there's more latitude for your hungry, young, up-and-coming, abrasive, cynical young prosecutors and people like them, law enforcement officers. Not a lot, but just a few. You know, like just as in regular crime, it's that 10%. The bad apples that create the critical mass that make things tough for everybody else, the Bill Cooks of the world.
Bill Cook being the prosecutor.
Bill Cook was the prosecutor in the Craig Nydorf case. Craig Nydorf was the fellow who was busted for publishing an alleged stolen E911 document in FRAC, which was an online electronic digest. And you get people like Bill Cook, who, in my opinion, tend to abuse their power for whatever their own personal motivation is. I won't guess, but they do, I would argue, very strongly abuse their power. And because of the vacuum in definitions, the vacuum in what people think ought or ought not occur in cyberspace, you have a lot of room for these ambitious types to come in and manipulate and kind of try to make careers for themselves. So that's one of the things that I see that is frustrating. You know, and you have a lot of idealistic prosecutors as well, idealistic law enforcement types, and I think part of the role of the cybernauts of the 21st century is to try to educate them. It's okay not to prosecute every single hacker case you come across, every single piracy case you come across. So one of the things we try to do is try to very strongly argue against the criminalization of all sorts of behaviors, to include especially hackers. Demonization of hackers, you know, creating this image of the dread hacker menace. The Forbes magazine piece of about 21 December 92.
I think we all saw that one. But I should point out that with the Craig Nydorf case that you mentioned, the government dropped the case against him. However, he was still faced with a huge amount of legal bills and was put into debt to the tune of about $100,000. He's still paying that off. And in many cases, when you're put on trial for something like this, even if you're completely cleared of all wrongdoing, you're still punished. And that's what's bad. That's something that that needs to be addressed. But I'd like to ask you, as editor of an online publication, speak to somebody out there that doesn't have a computer, somebody that doesn't see the significance of what's going on out there in the computer world. Why should they care?
We deal with this a lot here. I teach at a place called Northern Illinois University, and most of the people here are not computer literate. And one of the continual issues we have to push is that when we talk about cyber rights, that is the kinds of constitutional and other protections that we take for granted in our ordinary life that ought be extended into this thing called cyberspace, that we're not really talking about a small group of people. We're talking about the rights of the entire populace.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we begin to talk about things like copyright law, freedom of information, privacy, and other rights that we take for granted, we're talking about things that are gradually affecting everybody. I can't think of any domain of public or private life in which the issues of cyberspace don't apply. Take, for example, privacy. Why should the average non-computer user be concerned about privacy? It's because the privacy issues, the means of processing information, are so easy to do, are so quick, are so readily available to the I want to say con artist, but the dangers aren't really from the con artist as much as they are from the huckster, the marketeer, the profiteer, that the ways of manipulating, using, creating profiles about people affect us all. So even if we don't use computers, we're still affected by computers. We're still affected by things like copyright. I think a classic example would be, say, I teach, and if I want to use a... try to make an analogy here. If I want to use a Xerox copy of a journal article, that's fairly easy to do in a class under fair use doctrine. That is under a legal doctrine that says, you know, if you don't stretch things too far, you can use other people's copyright material, their so-called intellectual property. What you cannot do because of the changing laws with electronic intellectual property is do the equivalent of a Xerox with a copyright disk. So as we move into this computer age, when the laws affecting computer technology become increasingly limited and restrictive, and when they tend to criminalize behaviors that in the past were either not criminalized or at worst were just what they call a tort, just a minor screw-up of sorts, mm-hmm. We're talking about laws that affect everybody. I don't know if that's too general for you.
Well, I think I like to hear from people that that have no real computer background and see what they think about these kind of things. You know, as far as freedom in the computer world, how does that affect freedom in the real world? And I think it's pretty obvious to me that it's very closely knit. Let me ask you though, since you are the editor of this, or co-editor of this publication, do you get much feedback, any negative feedback from people that think that you go too far?
Yeah, sure. It's not too, but we try to keep it balanced. You know, like I said, Gordon and I are a co-editor, are a bit at odds and a bit you know, politically very different. Mm-hmm. So we wind up middle of the road, which is frustrating, I'm sure, for both of us. So probably that middle line saves us a lot of criticism. But, you know, there are some people out there who think that Son of Sam and the average hacker probably belong in the same jail cell, and that, you know, hackers are literally demons. And we just got a criticism the other day responding to our own criticism of a Forbes magazine piece that we mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh. What kind of criticism did you get?
This was essentially saying that we're so involved in the hacker underground that we can't see straight. And, you know, just this kind of nonsense from, I think the critics of hackers tend to take far more personally oriented attacks and highly, highly ideological, far more so than the other side.
Uh-huh.
And I should mention that we're neither pro nor anti-hacker. We're civil rights oriented. So when you ask why the average person who doesn't use a computer should be concerned, it's because we're talking about civil rights, not computer rights.
Well, now,
and all of the rights that deal with computers really tie back into civil rights. And what we're doing is really creating law for the next, we're moving in, a lot of people have missed this, I guess, but we're moving into the 21st century. And
uh-huh.
We have to, you know, pull a lot of people in kicking and screaming.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned this, so with the civil liberties and all, how tied in do you think things like the ACLU, groups like that, are they computer literate? Do they know what's going on? Do they see the implications?
Some do. Jan Lloyd Goldman does, and as an organization, no, they're all, you know, they're diverse, and they have to pick their fights. Unfortunately, when you have so many repressive forces out there, and the whole reason you have to do fundraising is because we have limited resources, and with limited resources, you have to be very careful. You can't really go out and fight all the just fights. You have to be selective, and the ACLU is very selective, just as we are selective. We don't deal with racism in schools. We deal with racism on the nets, or sexism on the nets, or whatever. And so, you know, we do have our own domains, and unfortunately, we tend to see them as divided up. But in fact, they're overlapping. I think the biggest flaw is that we're not united. We do have EFF and CPS. You have your various groups out there, like that
uh-huh.
fight for cyber rights, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is EFF,
right.
And Computers for blanking out here, CPSR,
Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, right? Well, that's a good lead in. First of all, we're talking with Jim Thomas, co-editor of Computer Underground Digest. Jim, why don't you tell us first of all how people can subscribe both online, and you mentioned something about people who don't have computers.
Yeah, if they don't have a computer, they can drop me a note at Jim Thomas or CUD, Department of Sociology, Northern Illinois University, DeKalb, DeKalb, Illinois 60115. And they're free. We don't. We can't charge. We're simply not allowed to charge. So uh-huh. There's no cost for it. If they wanted on disk, they would have to send the disks, because we can't afford any longer to give out. We used to send the disks out, but they'd have to send their own disks.
But preferably, if they're already on the internet, how would they subscribe then?
On internet, in one of two ways: either send a note to TK0JUT1@, and at is that funny sign over the two, at M as in Mary, V as in Very, S, MVS, dot CSO, not zero, but O, CSO, NIU, dot EDU. It's TK0JUT2 at MVS.CSO.NIU.EDU. Or they can drop a note to J Thomas at well.SF.CA.US.
Yeah, that last one seems much friendlier than the first one. The first one was very cryptic with all those letters and signs and things like that. But what you'll get in return is something that is not cryptic, something that's very straightforward and doesn't cost anything either.
Yeah, it's free. We come out once. So that comes back to your thing, that the reason we don't cost anything is because we've got people around here who donate their time, or mm-hmm. They donate something of themselves. If nothing else, just a bit of back turning to let us go on. So it's, you know, that, again, that notion of struggle being as long as history, and you have to kick in a few bucks, whether it's turn your back to let us do a few things here or whether it's sending $5 into WBAI.
Right. Well, now we seem to be at kind of a stagnant point here. It's we only have a half hour left, but we have quite a lot of money to make in that half hour, and we need people to help us out here. We have to raise about $500 in half an hour, and that's a lot. Now we have either one or two calls on the line. Not sure if those are social calls or what, but we're not sure here. But we want to fill up those phone lines. 212-279-3400. Two calls on the line right now. Let's make that 7. Please, we can do it. We need to do it. It's not really a question of, something we'd like to do. We really have to. We're not doing this because we're making anything out of it ourselves. We don't get a commission. Nothing like that happens. We have to raise a certain amount, or quite simply, we can't continue doing the things that we're doing right now. Off the Hook is on every week from 10 to 11, and we bring you information that no other program on this station brings you, and certainly no other program on any other station would bring you. In fact, I doubt there's a program like this anywhere else in the country. Without BAI, a lot that people have learned would be impossible. You wouldn't know how telephones really work. You wouldn't know about the civil liberties issues going on in the computer underground and the computer world in general. You wouldn't know about the threat that violations of those rights could pose to you. You wouldn't know about the dangers that computers can cause to you if left unchecked, if we trust things too much. 212-279-3400, please. Let's get those phone lines lit. We're offering you a special deal for a $70 pledge, a $2,600 subscription for an entire year, and a $2,600 T-shirt in addition to WBAI paraphernalia. 212-279-3400. We take Visa and MasterCard, so it's relatively painless if you pay it off in large time periods. We do need to hear from you, though. We have not gotten a call yet. 212-279-3400. We still got those two phone calls on and have been on for quite some time. Either they're donating lots of money or they're just talking casually. Let's make that 7 phone calls. 212-279-3400. We have Jim Thomas on the line. Jim is the co-editor of Computer Underground Digest, and he's joining us now from Illinois. And Jim, when people don't pay attention to things, lots of times bad things happen, like bad laws get passed. Any examples of that you can come up with over the past few years?
Yeah, I think most computer laws are bad laws because they tend to overgeneralize the kinds of things that can be criminalized. Let me take a step back. I'm a criminologist, which means I study things like crime and prison and all the rest. And one of the things that bothers me, especially in the last 20 years, is our tendency to make crimes out of behaviors for which there are many alternatives other than to punish by invoking a criminal sanction. In other words, you don't have to toss somebody. Do you have a... this is live. Do you have a lag button? I have to watch the language, huh?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. Our lag button is gone. Somebody took the lag button away. I don't know why they did, but somebody did that.
I'll try to be careful. Okay. You get laws that are pretty screwy. And right now, as I'm sure we all know, that our prison population has almost gone over the 1 million mark. And we have approximately 2% of the adult population, of the adult male population, is under some form of correctional supervision. That's 1 out of 50. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, and, it's hard to imagine that there's that many crimes to go around,
Well, one of the problems is we make more crimes, and primarily the introduction of new crimes or of new statutes that criminalize or turn what used to be torts into, or civil offenses into, criminal offenses, or intensifying previous crimes, such as drunk driving, this type of thing, uh-huh. Increasing the sanctions for drugs. What we've done is create what I would call an incarceral nation. We're essentially a nation of prisoners because we've passed critical mass of people who are in prison. A million people, that's a lot of people, Manuel. Wow. And when you add to that the people who are under some form of supervision, and you add to that the people in jails, and you add to that the people who are no longer under supervision but have been, we're talking about a sizable chunk of the population. So when you ask about bad laws, we're not talking about computer here. We're talking about the public well-being, mm-hmm. that anybody can be lagged for a crime for any reason, whether it's drunk driving, whether under something I'll talk about in a second, under the new copyright laws. finding ways to criminalize what we do in ways that lead to a highly repressive criminal justice system. Okay, so point one, we're becoming a nation of prisoners, an incarceral nation. So what that means is that the cause has been twofold. First of all, in the view that we can control behavior by punishing it, not simply through education, we pay lip service to education, but primarily we control behavior by punishing it. Beat them over the head, coercion. Okay, we take a lot of, I suppose we have, as a society, a very cynical view of the nature of human nature. We think that we really can't treat or teach or rehabilitate or whatever. So we've moved into this very repressive, punitive philosophy. To do that, it means we pass laws. Some of these laws we all know, drug laws, increasingly strict drug laws, increasingly strict drunk driving laws, for our purposes, laws against so-called computer abuse, computer intrusion. In other words, you can't really hack into somebody else's computer under federal law, or it's a heavy-duty felony. You can't transport, in quotes, a stolen document across state lines, or that's a heavy-duty felony. Now, that sounds pretty serious, transporting stolen stuff across state lines. But in fact, what we've done with the new cyber law is create not just simply new laws, but new definition. What counts as property? What counts as theft? If you hack into my computer and take out a note, if you take out my laundry list, technically, that is my property. I think we'd all agree with that. If you send it across state lines, well, I still have my property right here. But essentially what we've done is make this the same kind of an offense as if you had broken in and stolen my computer itself. It's a felony.
And that leaves you with an almost infinite amount of crime that could stem from one particular object.
That leaves prosecutors with one heck of a lot of discretion that they can use to try to bust people. And this is where cynicism comes in. Now, it's not what the law says that can make a prosecutor decide how to pursue a particular case, but it's how the prosecutor can try to make the law appear to apply to a case. Broad wording of broadly written statutes lead to abuse, which means you can essentially criminalize, make felons out of what are, I would argue, kids who, in many cases, are no worse than jaywalkers. I'm not arguing that one should have the right to break into any computer they want. For now, I don't think that's the point. I'm not arguing for or against computer abuse. I argue strongly against any form of predatory behavior, whether it comes from computer abusers or from prosecutors. And I think we've seen too many cases of how the prosecutors are able to manipulate the law. Let's take a concrete example. Why should this stuff concern non-computer users? Something you may be familiar with, a 2600 meeting a couple of months ago in Washington, D.C. If allegations are correct, it means that the Secret Service was alleged to have surveilled or have participated in the instigation of surveillance on a law-abiding, peaceful assembly of people who are doing nothing more than exercising their First Amendment rights to meet.
And not only surveillance, but disruption as well. After all, they were searched, they were kicked out of the mall, and all kinds of things like that. Equipment was seized, in fact, that wasn't even illegal, it belonged to them.
Yep, I agree with all of that, but I'm not even going to go that far. I'll just take a very cautious and conservative view and say, assuming that all they did was assume responsibility for either surveilling or for instigating the surveillance. Anything they did beyond that is totally reprehensible. But if they only did the surveillance or instigation of the surveillance, that is a violation of their mandate, of their statutory authority. So what we're talking about is using broad law in a new area to justify circumventing existing laws that limit what they can do to the populace. Put it more simply, what bad law does in cyberspace is expand the latitude that law enforcement has in real space. What we're talking about is things like political surveillance. We all know from the 1960s and 70s that political surveillance, that is the police spying on people who are doing nothing more than writing letters to newspapers saying, hey, the Vietnam War is bad, or racism is bad, or sexism is bad. These people would get what they call Red Squad files or dissident files. They call different things in different jurisdictions. And I was part of a class action suit against the Michigan State Police. And we found the kinds of information they were collecting and doing this kind of unauthorized surveillance was frightening because people were losing jobs. It was being spread among people, all sorts of people, who had power over the lives of the people who were spied on. And this is the kind of thing we see potentially creeping back in if the Secret Service is allowed, or if any organization is allowed to surveil in cyberspace. Very easy to extend that into real space, into a mall. What that also means is that things like RICO, when RICO went through a few years ago, you don't have a lot of people out there saying, hey, I support the right of organized crime to be organized criminals. They didn't have a constituency, the organized crime folk didn't. So the RICO laws, that is the laws that essentially authorize the government to come in and confiscate or forfeit property of alleged wrongdoers, has been extended to drug dealers and to computer folk. What it means is that people can come in, that the law enforcement can come in, as they have done, confiscate people's computer equipment for under the guise of investigation, need for evidence, not return it. People have never been charged with a crime. So you have this expansion of bad computer law that expands the discretion of people to circumvent previous laws that limited what prosecutors or investigators could or couldn't do. Bottom line, bad computer law screws us all up.
Well, I guess the thing, if people want bad computer laws, the best thing to do is just not do anything, right? They'll arrive on their own accord. if people don't stand up and take some sort of position here, you can pretty much guarantee that bad restrictive laws, laws pretty much regulating thought crime, will be here before we know it.
Well, basically, that's what we're talking about, 1984 kind of society. And especially as we move into areas where people aren't organized to fight or resist, then you have the problems. And I think people are beginning to organize out there in this thing called cyberspace. But I hate to keep repeating it, but struggle is as long as history. The only way you can stop this stuff is to stand up and say no more. This is enough. Take a quick example. That Software Publishers Association, which protects the software publishers, they lobbied to have something passed that was called the Anti-Piracy Bill. It used to be, what it is now, it's PL 102561, and what it has done is it's lowered the threshold of the amount of software that people can copy before they're labeled criminals. More simply, you can be tossed in jail if you copy within a six-month period 10 copies of a tape, of a phono record. This was aimed primarily at copyright software, WordPerfect, Lotus. It has to have a retail value of more than $2,500. So you copy five copies of WordPerfect, or 10 copies of WordPerfect. Technically, that makes you a felon. My guess is that your listeners out there have done an awful lot of... there's probably more than one listener out there with a creatively borrowed copy of WordPerfect, or Aldous, or any other of their favorites.
You hear that? We're talking to you. We're talking to you. We know who you are. So.
We've got the number. If they don't call your number, 212-279-3400, we're going to turn them in.
If I just interject for a second, we got a very generous donation, and that brings us a lot closer. We still have a couple of $100 to go, though, in 15 minutes. So please, if you're thinking of calling and donating something to us, remember, life is filled with similarities here, and while we say that not doing anything will ensure bad computer laws, not doing anything in this case will ensure bad radio, will ensure BAI becoming less powerful in what it says. We'll have to worry more about raising money and less about what we want to say on the radio and who we talk to and that kind of thing. And one day, who knows, it might become too expensive for us to continue. We might not be able to raise enough to continue, and you might hear Hot 99.5. Who knows? You got to be careful of these things. So please show your support, 212-279-3400. We'll make it as pleasant as possible. That we have we don't have professional salespeople down there. They won't chew your ear off or anything like that. They're just radio listeners, harmless people that... I don't know if they like being called harmless. That might be an affront. But, you know, interesting people like yourself, people that listen to the radio and people that want to contribute something and have contributed their time. So call up, speak to one of them, tell them how much you want to donate. They'll take your name and address. If you have a Visa or MasterCard number, they'll take that information too. And you'll be casting a vote for WBAI. You'll be casting a vote for awareness. And, you know, you'll learn a lot from this as well, because you'll be getting something in return. You'll be getting the magazines. You'll be getting the WBAI folio and all kinds of other bits and pieces. And plus, you'll be a part of this whole thing. You know, it's one thing to listen. It's another thing to be involved. And here at WBAI, we make it fairly simple, you know. All you have to do, really, is just give us a call, and you're part of us. You know, you're part of the family. And, you know, unlike the religious stations where we, you know, hear them constantly asking for money and wanting your soul and all those kind of things, we don't really want your soul. We just, you know, want you to help us out financially. And we want your mind. We want you to think and exercise good judgment and show us some alternative viewpoints and write us letters and call us on the phone and voice your opinion on the air. But we want to be able to continue to do that well into the 90s, into the next century. By pledging something now, you're ensuring that we'll take that step. You know, we can't take all the steps at once. We have to take one step at a time. And right now we're taking the January 93 membership step. If we trip while we're making that step, it's going to make the next one that much harder. So help us make this step. And every show is also a step within the membership drive. In other words, if we don't make our particular goal, that means the show after us and the shows the next days have to work harder to make up for the abysmal failure that we've become here. So please don't make us into an abysmal failure. You know, show us that you care. Show us that Off the Hook means something to you and that you've learned something from it. We're not going to be on next week. So if you're thinking of calling next week and pledging then, no. I mean, the folio says we are, but it happens to be wrong this time. We're not on next week. So this is your chance. Call us now, 212-279-3400. Show your support for alternative thinking. Show your support for electronic communication and knowledge. The kinds of things that Jim Thomas has been talking about as editor of a computer magazine, an online computer magazine, he comes into contact with First Amendment issues quite a bit, I'll bet. Quite a lot of controversy out there, and it's really the front lines. This is where the battle for the First Amendment is being fought right now, in the electronic frontier, not necessarily out in the open. You might not even see it. It's a battle that's going on that you can't even see. 212-279-3400. We have one call on the line. Let's make that three. Man, that's not so hard, is it? That's not asking much. And maybe we can bridge that gap. We have a couple hundred bucks left to go. 212-279-3400. Jim, you're talking about the Software Publishing Association.
Yeah.
And you want to elaborate on the things that they stand for?
Yeah, let me just make a quick point here that I think that... when you get up and make that call you're trying to get people to make, you're talking about turning them from lurkers, from just casual, passive sit-at-homes into interactive participants. And we all know how much we hate lurkers out there. So.
Yeah, and at no risk either. We don't turn your name over to the FBI or anything
right,
like that.
It's totally free.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the SPA, what the SPA does is they're a group that tries to enforce the what they perceive to be the copyright the copyright rights of their members, and these are software authors. And the SPA's position is that no unpurchased software must be reproduced unless you are reproducing a single copy for backup, not for use, but for backup that you store away. This means that all those listeners out there who have that extra copy of WordPerfect are criminals. Maybe not felons yet, but misdemeanors. That slippery slope. My God, I can hear them all now, Emmanuel. They're all they're sliding down that slope to felony life. So they better get that call into you before they go off to jail.
Now, are you saying, are there really people out there that think that people should go to jail because they have a copy of WordPerfect?
Well, I think it's more than just a single copy. The SPA's view is that any copying is wrong, period, that it's criminal. Now, whether that means you're going to be a felon or just simply a misdemeanor, it's a different issue. But their view is that you have to have some form of heavy sanction, heavy threat, in order to make people obey. They have this dominatrix view of the, I guess, of life, and that they... well, their advertisements are based on a highly coercive view. For example, copy this... software, they say, and get this hardware free. And then they show a picture of somebody copying the song, a couple of discs and being taken off in handcuffs. So it's this very draconian, very, very intense kind of punishment that they try to stress. It's the image of the hacker, of the pirate is evil, as the copier is evil. So yeah, I would say they would see any, I mean, they're quite clear, any copying is a crime. It's theft. It's like shoplifting. They call it soft lifting. So yeah, absolutely. The SPA, from what they've said and written, does appear to see copying of any disc as criminal and subject to criminal sanctions. Whether they would pursue every single encroachment, I don't know. But they.
Who is it that supports this line of thinking? Are there certain organizations that? Are major contributors to this? Or?
Yeah, they have. Well, let me. I think, in fairness, we did an interview, a couple of interviews with the SPA that we're going to try to pull together. And the SPA does a couple of different things. Some of the things they do are quite good. They do try to stress education when they can. They're really two different. There's two sub organizations within them. One, they're a professional organization, not private members. So to subscribe to SPA, you have to be a software company or sub as a company. And their dues range, I think, from $750 a year on up. So they have a sliding scale type of thing. So they have a lot of members. But one of the many things they do for their members is organize conferences. They do marketing research. They do all the things that a good organization should do for their members. So much of what they do for members is quite useful. Then they have what they call their copyright protection division. And that's the group that really enforces the copyright law. And what they do is take people to court. They threaten to take people to court. They've never actually gone to court. They will threaten a lawsuit. And their strategy is to get the corporation, the alleged transgressor, to settle out of court. The money that they get in the settlement goes to pay for the legal fees because they retain private counsel, and it goes back into the copyright protection crowd, into the copyright protection fund. So it's really a self-sustaining fund with motivation to keep threatening to litigate because it means they get more money. So two things are going on. They do a lot of good stuff, but they also do some things that many of us are uncomfortable with. With this new law, anti-copyright law that lowers the threshold for copyright, what it appears to do is give groups like the SPA an added weapon. Now they can not only threaten civil litigation, but they can also threaten criminal prosecution as a way to try to coerce a company to settle out of court.
Now, you're saying companies and...
Or institution or individuals or bulletin boards.
Right now, this seems to be limited to companies, but I'm wondering, are they going to make the jump to individuals at any point, to prosecute individuals for having extra copies of programs that they might not have paid list price for?
Was essentially clear to the unjust charges against him back in 90, it was because of free information of people getting together. Same with Steve Jackson Games, and he was raided by the Secret Service unjustly. Free information of people getting together, and that's why I think it's so important that things like WBAI be supported, because we're not talking about WBAI anymore. The cut is talking about cyberspace. We're talking about constitutional rights and protecting our rights, and this has nothing to do with the electronic age. The electronic age is just the window through which we're trying to fight for broader rights for everybody.
I don't think I could have said that better myself. Jim, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight and wish you luck.
Thank you, Emmanuel.
And hopefully we'll have you back on sometime.
Yeah, I like that. So take care and good luck. And what can I say? Those T-shirts are fantastic, and people who subscribe for $70 are getting a great deal.
Okay. Thanks again.
Take care. Bye.
That's going to do it for us tonight on Off the Hook. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. We won't be on next week. And again, if you want to call up and show your support, this is your last chance. 212-279-3400. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. Until 2 weeks from now, good night.
Coming this Saturday at 9 p.m., the Secret Museum of the Air. Dateline 100 years ago. Daring explorers risk their lives to capture the hidden sounds of humanity with a newly discovered invention, the gramophone. Join Citizen Kafka and curator Pat Conti as they slowly peel back the layers of time to enter the shrouded mists of the golden age of the gramophone. Each week, the lost sounds of historic recordings from the far corners of the earth on the Secret Museum of the Air. Visiting hours every Saturday from 9 to 10 p.m. Remember, knowledge is power, thoughts have wings, and the Secret Museum is open this Saturday at 9 p.m. That's Saturday, 9 p.m., the Secret Museum of the Air. 9 p.m. Saturday. 9 p.m. Saturday.